Our next speaker is Dr. John Wolferton, and John is an adjunct senior research fellow at the Australian Centre for Agriculture and Law at the University of New England, and he will be talking about a project that he's been involved with, which is a CRC-funded one, about nurturing innovative rural businesses.
Thanks,
John,
Paula.
You're good to
yep. Could you have that glass of water, mate? Well, good morning, everybody. I'm glad I didn't score the right after lunch session. That can be pretty tricky to keep people awake. Thanks, Guy, for that presentation and for bringing us a bit of thinking about this role of small business in rural communities. It's something that I'd like to talk some more on now. And I'm told by the technical gurus here, if I push that, aha, right. I'd like to give you my summary before I start, so you know where I'm heading. So the key points I'd like to bring out is, I guess, a proposition that small businesses are at the guts of rural communities. And if we're talking about the idea of having communities in rural Australia, which I tried to get at last night with the question about, you know, what's the vision? Does Australians' vision include the fact that we have people in the bush? Then we do need these rural communities, and I'd argue that the small business sector is a really key part of that. We're looking at how an integrated partnership-based approach is needed to help strengthen the small business sector of rural communities, and just this comment from over here just then about Bingra and at Warrie Alderway, some of the things that are going on there, let's get on the front foot to find out what we can do into the future. It's just the sort of thing I'm thinking about there. A key focus should be on capturing and harnessing local knowledge and can-do attitude. I think that was a point that came out in yesterday's question and answer session, and the importance of not just being experts from afar who say this is what the answer is, you need to do it, but rather really working hard to work with and to work alongside of people who are in the areas, who are in the towns, who've got local knowledge and expertise. And the other point I want to bring out, and I think what we're proposing is a bit of a new way of looking at this, or an enhanced way of looking at this. We've had a lot of talk about the idea of resilience, and it's around in the national discourse at the moment in a number of arenas. In general, it's used in a relatively vague way, and people don't make the opportunities they could of the fact that there's quite a robust theory underpinning resilience thinking. It comes out of the ecological and geographical science areas. And it can be quite readily adapted into the sort of things we've been thinking about over these couple of days. As such, I just want to give a little bit of an introduction to some of that resilience theory, just to let you know that it's there mainly, is the main point. So look, we know there's a world of change. There's some global factors, a whole range of them there that we don't work in isolation from. Whilst we might have fairly a sense of regional independence and having our own destiny and all of those things, nevertheless, we live in a world, it's a connected world, and things influence us. Of course, there's local change, what you actually face immediately in your business environment, in your communities, price fluctuations and other factors that affect farm profitability, not to mention drought, of course, and floods, change to water allocations, and the environment's claims through humans to have more water. The trading out of water from areas, which leaves causes various problems in some places when you dewater parts of an area or whole areas. The various impacts we might see of climate change, or indeed climate variability, as I think Guy's presentation showed, that people feel that variability is a bigger issue than climate change itself. And we've got to look at things like water yields, droughts and floods, and how they might change through time, and what are the impacts of coal and gas mining, just as some of the examples of things you face locally. You know all of that. So if Australia really does value the concept of the rural, then we need people to keep living in the rural areas. Now, resilience gives us insights into how entities, organisations, people, organisms respond to significant change. It can also help to understand how to be more adaptable and thus more able to survive change. Resilience is fundamentally about change. It's not just part of it. Think about what happens when you get change. but rather that when you look at the theory, it's all about so-called adaptive cycles and how things are always in motion. So it's well placed to help us understand how we deal with change in our communities. So what is it? It's a bit of a jargon word possibly for many of you, or just rhetoric you've heard. Well, it's actually got a meaning. It's the ability of a system or a person or an organism to bounce back after some disturbance. It's very general. You can find it used in many contexts. The human health people, particularly mental illness, that talk about people being resilient is being able to, you know, survive episodes of depression or other sort of traumas that would, you know, potentially affect their mental or physical health. Disaster recovery. Currently, there's a disaster recovery authority in Queensland to respond to the flooding that happened up there with a period of 2 years to work. And their agenda is to build resilience to natural disaster. That's what they're about. Sustainability of ecosystems, where the concept has had a lot of currency, economic systems and organisations. You can hear all being talk about this concept. So there's actually a package. When you talk about resilience thinking, it comes with a concept package. You get the idea of resilience itself, the notion that there's adaptability, which is, you know, how you can change things so that you'll be more resilient next time there's a change. Transformability, I think the common phrase is don't flog a dead horse. So sometimes if something's past its use-by date, you've got to rise up and create something new. Scale matters, so never get caught into just looking at your little bit. Always take a bigger picture and have a look what's happening at a lower scale as well. Recognise that hierarchies aren't linear, so just because you've got this above this, in these sort of systems, there'll be multiple connections in those hierarchies. And thresholds are important. I know that it's one thing that the catchment management authorities are currently concerned with, is managing their systems so that they don't cross thresholds that they prefer they didn't cross. Well, we've taken a focus on small business. Basically, we had a project funded to look at that, and that happened. My colleague Bernice Cote sitting down there was something she and Tony Sorensen from UNE put together earlier on, and I've joined the project in its later stage. Small business is important. I don't know if you've seen those sort of numbers, but nearly half of the Australian employment in the Australian economy is attributable to small business, and over a third of economic activity, or in the way it's measured there, value added. Talking with a couple of you yesterday, I get the feeling that, and I did look for data on this but couldn't really find it, that in the rural communities those numbers are going to be quite a bit higher. In other words, small business is going to be much more important in the rural communities than those national statistics show. Just a little bit on how the two theories line up. So you have small business management, accounting and that whole area of how you do things, and they have concepts coming out of that. So, for instance, the idea of creative destruction is one you read about in the small business literature, where basically innovation leads to a new product or a new way of doing things, and that's creative. But what it will do is make firms that don't adopt that less, or don't have the copyright to do that, less profitable and able to compete, and they'll tend to die out. So you have a natural cycle, a natural small business life cycle. In resilience thinking, you've got the idea of the adaptive cycle. So you can bring those things together. So innovation can result in either adaptation, which you get a more resilient system, or transformation, which you create a new sort of system, or sometimes people talk about an emergent system. And small business and or community thresholds can be crossed, leading to significant decline. And you know what? It's possible to also use thresholds on purpose to cross them to lead to improvement. Thresholds aren't always bad things. Sometimes you might want to change something for the better. So it just gives you a way of thinking about that and how you might go about addressing it. I'd argue that small business is a really good focus for localism policy, which we've been hearing something about. There's a discussion paper that deals with that from Anthony Hogan's group in your handouts. And I think small business could be a really good focus. And one of the reasons is that small business is about the free market model. It's about enterprise. It's about individuals getting out there and having a go. And it's being a sense of, you know, this is us, we're here, a sense of community, all ties up around that small, not only small business, but I think it's a key part of it. And a quote from the minister there about what localism's about. Right, so I've got some propositions. If you listen carefully to speakers, they will have assumptions underlying what they say. There's assumed values underlying what they say. I've got a lot of assumed values under what I say, and I'm just declaring three of them here to you explicitly. Resilient communities should continue to be an important part of the Australian landscape. That's what I've been hearing generally. Nobody's going to get up and say they shouldn't be, and I think we believe that they should continue. The rural small business sector has the potential to help enhance the overall resilience of rural communities, and resilience thinking can be applied. Now, resilience thinking, does that sound active to you? Does that sound like action and things happening? That, you could say no, if you like. It doesn't have to be rhetorical. It doesn't to me, I must say. It sounds like we're thinking about it. I'll think about that and get back to you, you know? I reckon we've got to somehow translate that to resilience in action. What does it mean? How would you actually do something? How can you make something different by doing this? And I've had a long experience working in an area called transformational change, which is thinking about how do you get the stuff that we know, the stuff that we do, the stuff that we plan, the stuff that we strategise, how do you get people to actually engage with that and go, oh, let's do things a bit differently. Maybe I could think differently about this problem. Maybe we could take a different action here. Until that happens, nothing's changed. That's what you've got to see change. Transformational change is about being purposeful about thinking about that up front and saying what we want to achieve to see those changes happen. We've heard a lot of people take the stage and make those sort of pronouncements over the last couple of days, and that's fantastic, because that's what we've got to focus on. I think, Mel, you certainly sound as a champion for that type of approach. It certainly occurs to me. So I'm thinking about resilience in action and looking particularly at supporting the small business sector and by inference, the larger rural communities. You've got to focus on something, and I think this gives us something to focus on usefully. In another CRC, I was nearly going to wear the CRC for Irrigation Futures shirt, but I thought at Cotton CRC that might be a little bit provocative, so I didn't do that. But nevertheless, we did some research there, and it was in this change processes work, and produced a handbook called Resilience Management, a guide for irrigated regions, communities and enterprises. In that, there's a whole lot of ideas, a bit of a smorgasbord of stuff you could take and use. It was a conceptual framework. We never really took that any further, but it was based on some good empirical work and case study work in various catchment and commodity group areas. What we did in that, though, was identify some indicators that would give us a bit of a heads up as to how a community was going in terms of its resilience. Now, you know what I've been really chuffed about is that over this conference and an earlier one I was at last month here at Science Forum for the Cotton CRC, I hear other people repeating these things through other research. It's kind of triangulating it and saying this stuff is pretty important. There are some other ones that I haven't shown there. I'll pick ones that are perhaps more relevant to small business. Of course, you'd want to think about your natural system health as well. It would have to be in there. If your soils all become salinised everywhere, you haven't got a rural industries and that discussion we just had before about how important they are. So these are just a few. Capacity building, knowledge sharing, integrated approaches and collective solutions, mechanisms for incorporating learning into planning. And we could go a step further than that, learning into planning and then also into, you know, how does policy get affected by what we do learn out in the field? Thank you. And I guess some of the things that you might want to do to make sure you're well placed to be adaptable and be able to deal with the need for transformation when it happens, innovation, how well do you actually adopt new ideas in the area, you know, do people have a history of taking your ideas and running with them, diversification, reflective institutions and local empowerment to change. Reflective institutions, what that's getting at is an institution can be either an organisation or a set of rules or laws, and what that means is that they're actually attentive to what's going on around them and learning and adapting so that institutions themselves adapt. Not just how we do things, but the rules around us, the policies, the way you organise yourselves as a committee, say, adapts to what you see around you and how you have to adapt to continue your resilience. So you could use those as part of a bit of an overall approach to strategising. You know, I know a number of you, you've seen strategies in the past, they sit on the shelf, nothing happens. That's not so much a problem with the strategy, I think it's a problem with what people's commitment is to move it forward afterwards, and funding and a lot of things. All I'm suggesting here is it's still not having a strategy, which means you can prioritise things, but what do you base your priorities on? You base your priorities on building your resilience quite explicitly. And again, I'm hearing people talking about that in sort of spots. What we're talking about here is making this much more coherent, making, if you like, a grand narrative or a big picture story that you can apply to. All of this is an umbrella. So you could work out some sort of score of resilience for an area, which would be highly controversial, I'm sure. But its point would be to compare to yourself through time. So you'd use that as a way of having a look, looking at where your weaknesses are as an area, saying what can we do to improve them. Then putting stuff into action, learning of the kids in the community, great one. You know, it's tomorrow's leaders are there, you're training them. That's an example of the sort of thing that would happen. It would happen within a context of overall resilience, and then you can think about it strategically. And as I say, you could either do it as whole of community or just with the small business sector. It really depends on the needs of the area you're in. So what are we proposing? There's been many things tried in a lot of places. Councils have got economic development offices, community development offices. The CMAs have got community engagement programs. There's any range of things happening. The area that I believe, and Bernice, my colleague, is about is small business, has probably been underdone. One of the reasons is that they're really busy and it's hard to get people involved, but it's an important sector to engage with. So our particular focus here on what we're talking about is that sector. Don't think that we're blind to the fact that it needs to be partnership-based and you need to involve a lot of people. But we think if we start by building that small business sector through the Chamber, which is after all a form of self-help organisation, then I think we're kind of on an interesting track. And you could do a number of things, which aren't any different probably to any sort of small business support ideas you've had yourselves. But again, it's in a coherent and structured way. You'd have a local Why Do Business Here prospectus. This was an idea that came for us out of working in Moree. It would help both the Economic Development Officer, if people are looking to do business here, but it could also remind existing business operators in the town of the various resources and endowments that are available to them. Thank you. These ideas have come from us working in the communities at St George and Moree. We note that a critical problem for chambers is their busyness. They're small business operators, basically, in the rural towns, and they've got very limited time to engage with strategic activity or often even business improvement for their own businesses because they're just busy taking care of the day-to-day stuff. Can we find a way to help them pass this threshold? So here's the idea of a threshold and a purposeful attempt to cross it because it could result in some positive things. Right, what are we going to do about it? What are we proposing? This is the inaction bit. Well, it's a coherent and structured approach based generally on resilience principles, so there's something that ties it together. You identify your weaknesses and basically take steps to do something about it through appropriate planning and so on. And it's got to be a partnership based. We've done this in both St George and Moree. It's work in progress. As it was work coming through the cotton CRC, we were in places where cotton is a strong part of the agricultural sector. And what we've sought to do is create partnering. And we were hearing from the problems, as Guy was saying, the service town tends to contract through the hard times, but the industry still needs it there for when times are good. So does the industry realise that and actually think proactively about how to help look after its service town, I wonder? So trying to find ways of partnering that up and getting that to happen seem to us to be something worthwhile doing. So we've been able to make that connection up in St George. We're working on that connection in Moree. Everybody's busy. It's something you've got to kind of work through. We only had 6 months for this project, which is not enough time. It's the sort of thing you've got to work on over quite a period of time. Just about there. Thanks. So it's clearly about building human and social capital, what we're talking about. It embraces a localism approach. And as you read those dot points there below it, can anybody tell me what occurs to them in reading those dot points? Is there any common unifying thing about those dot points? What do you reckon? Have you heard any of those things recently? I visibly plagiarised lots of things people said yesterday. Now one could argue I'm an opportunist, which I am, I'll admit to it. Pardon? Yeah, well, not only him. This was also a lot of stuff that came from the floor. There's a couple of things from him. A lot of stuff that came from the floor. My point in writing them up, and I love that comment, we're not the problem, we're part of the solution. We've absolutely, to have true resilience, you've got to have the people that live here and do here and are here. That's where the answer is. We can bring in the stuff from outside, but ultimately it's got to build around the people that are there. And so it really is, I really love this concept of localism, if we can turn it into a reality on the ground. So I'm suggesting we need some sort of program of support, some sort of part-time project officers for the chambers to help them overcome their busyness. I'm not sure how that gets funded, but that's what I see is needed. We need a strategy for each town based on the objectives to improve resilience. Many towns have already got a strategy. All you need to do is go through it and think about, from a resilience perspective, do we need to tweak it a bit? Support materials for training and mentoring. Help chamber members or others to provide mentoring for others. Local prospectus for each town and general advice and mentoring. So just to go back and recap. Yep, that's it, my slide. So the proposition is that small business matters, and it's a critical part, the small business sector is a critical part for the resilience of rural communities. We've got to have some sort of integrated business partnership-based approach to sort of work with them. Key focus is harnessing local knowledge and can-do attitude that's already there. And we could use resilience thinking as a way to underpin this with a robust set of theories and a coherency in order to help it move forward. And I believe end up achieving some good regional sort of development type of outcomes that many of us have sought to pursue over the years. Thank you.
I've just got time for one quick question, Barb.
I actually asked Barb to be quite critical of my presentation, so I hope the question doesn't reflect it.
I'm a farmer from Mundi. I like everything you say, but I'm just wondering, are the problems or the issues you're raising, are they particular to the rural small business, or could there be small business anywhere? And I say this because I have a friend who has a small business in Cooch in Sydney, and all of the things you identified, they've got a sense of community, they struggle with all of the things in the cities. Can we learn from looking outside our own little space and broaden the, that could also be a way of reaching the urban rural development?
Absolutely, Barb, and as you use the key word there, which is sense of community. My general feeling has been that when I look at cities, I find it hard to find a sense of community, whereas when you get out in the rural areas more, there's a sort of sense of we and us. And so the sort of thing I do, that transformational change type of game, works much better when there's a sense of community you can find and work with. So wherever you can find that, you can do the sort of thing I'm talking about. There's any number of things you can do in other places, I'm sure, but that's just been a focus of mine. And I guess a passion for mine is the rural scene. So no reason why not.
Yep. Thank you. John Walker, Chair of ARA. I'd like to congratulate you on identifying small businesses as the drivers of communities, which plays a massive part in that. The thing that I see is there's a gap between what you're trying to do and it actually working. And that is, and the comments were that small business is busy, it's not having the time. What it is you're taking small business into their own community to discuss strategies, which are their ideas that can be copied by other businesses.
Yep.
Small business like to work in isolation and they like to work in confidentiality. And if you miss that, you won't be able to drive that. And I think the best example appears to me to be a well-kept secret is that you need to look at the community of Cobar and how they're diversifying and increasing their resilience through small business and how they're growing small business in their communities. So I think that's something that's worth knowing.
Thank you for that. We're critically aware of a number of those sort of issues with small business, and we keep coming back and looking at what's in this slide, but it's a big part of activity. So given that, given they're busy, given the confidentiality issue, how can we still work to somehow grow it, to help it? That's really the question I've tried to tackle, given all of those things. And let's look at Cobar and see what's going on. And look, I'm an action researcher, so I'm interested in doing and understanding and then trying to think about, could we do this somewhere else more broadly to help others? So that's kind of the idea. So this is some ideas just based on what we've been able to do so far. And if we find a way of being able to expand the work, then, I'd love to have that sort of input and, critically evaluate it and go, but hang on, that won't work because, okay, well, what do we need to do? The objective is to help strengthen the small business sector.
Yep. Thank you, John, for that. That's great. Thanks.